If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to the show. I'm Carol Gold. I'm here with my co-host, Steve Clark. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening, Carol.
So the number here is 914-803-4522. And admittedly, we're going to tackle what is a tough subject tonight because people's emotions are highly invested depending on which end of the argument you come down on or which end of the position you come down on. But it's an important discussion. It needs to be had, and I think it needs to be had now more than ever, probably since 1973 when Roe v. Wade was passed, because abortion has come to the forefront of the news through the alleged misappropriation of resources by Planned Parenthood. But there's another component to it as well that's more spiritual and less practical that I want to get to. And in fact, Steve, there are three ways in which I think abortion plays out. One is its legality, one is its morality, and one is its spirituality. And all three of them eventually intersect. But for tonight's show, what I'd like to do is start with the least contentious of all three of them. I want to look at the morality of the harvesting of body parts, of organs, of fetuses and infants, well, fetuses, in utero as part of the abortion process that has now come to light. I want to look at it from a couple of angles. First of all, is this an issue about the improper filming of what Planned Parenthood is doing with their resources and with their access to pregnant women? Or is this an issue that is about the propriety of them doing it at all? Because there are stories in the news that talk about, they're focused on what the capture of this through video, through interview, how that has been wrong, as opposed to looking at the actions itself of Planned Parenthood. So that's one aspect of it. But the other aspect is, I don't care how you feel about what we call a woman's right to choose, and even that is a dubious expression. But no matter how you feel about abortion, I would think that anyone, with any feeling person, would see the objection, the horror, and the wrongfulness of crushing a baby's skull in utero so that you don't damage any of the organs, so that you can then harvest them and sell them for profit. So I'd like to start there, Steve, with these recent revelations and around the morality of the actions of Planned Parenthood. Would you like to jump in here, Steve?
Yeah, regarding the morality, the first point that I think needs to be addressed, it's just, let's call it what it is. It's a federal crime to sell body parts. And if people have a hard time understanding it, it just, think of it this way. If people could sell body parts, then there would be a market for killing people and dismembering their bodies and using their organs. There's a reason why, for example, people who need kidneys and need livers, or there's a waiting list, and organ donors give them upon their death so they can be used. There's a reason behind that, because the law understands that if you actually made a market for organs, people would be killed for those organs. It would be too lucrative not to do so. So that's the justice behind the law. And so the fact that Planned Parenthood is doing it because, quote unquote, they get a pass. The pass that they get is via the law, that they're able to abort and kill babies. And by doing so, when they suck out the babies, there's parts that are left over. And I think to everybody's surprise, they're using those parts and they're making a business to sell those parts. So I think that's really what, you know, I don't know how many more horrific you can explain it, but that's really the, you know, the horror that I see that's taking place. What do you think, Carol?
Well, I do think that, you know, it's a slippery slope. I'll use the analogy. In Judaism, there's the letter of the law, meaning the letter of the Torah, and how you should eat, how you should dress, how you should behave. And then there's something that the rabbis call fences. And fences are rabbinical laws that are placed around biblical law to keep you even further away from potentially violating a biblical law. So, for example, you're not supposed to mix meat and dairy if you're kosher. However, in Judaism, Orthodox Jews people who are kosher, they don't eat milk and dairy and chicken, and they don't eat dairy and turkey. When technically the meat that you're not supposed to mix dairy with is meat that it comes from Deuteronomy, where it says you shouldn't boil a kid in its mother's milk. Well, there's no milk in a chicken, and there's no milk so you couldn't be boiling a chicken or an egg in its mother's milk to begin with. There's no milk. So the fence is that aspect that keeps you away from the greater crime, let's call it, the greater commission of a violation of religious law. It's the same thing. There are slippery slopes, and we hopefully set up what we call fences to keep people from going down those slopes. I think that when you passed Roe v. Wade in 1973 and abortion morphed into birth control, it morphed into a means of birth control, that the next slippery slope, the obvious way to go is, well, now it's a business. Planned Parenthood is a business, and we can get into the origin of Planned Parenthood in a minute, but Planned Parenthood is a business. Businesses always look for ways to maximize their profits, right? Even to expand the ways in which they do their business. So it doesn't take much of a stretch to think that after a while they would wind up in the business of then using those, what they call tissue, but of course it's much more than that, it's organs, it's developed hearts, developed organs, using organs to make a profit from this now already legalized form of birth control. So I'm not surprised we got here in one sense. In another sense, it boggles the mind because, you know, I had a friend, she was a psychologist, and in the 1990s, she said to me, every civilization that has ever disregarded its children has failed to survive. And it came to me this week when she said that, because because this Saturday is a holiday called the ninth of Av. It's the ninth day of the month, Hebrew month of Av. So what's important about it in terms of this discussion? Well, first of all, the day commemorates the destruction of both the first and second temples and the capture of Jerusalem and the exile of the Jews to Babylonia, where for 70 years they couldn't return to the land they were enslaved. But the important part of this is that they were warned that they were going to be slaughtered. They were warned that the Jerusalem would be destroyed by the prophet Jeremiah, who said, among other things, that they were using their children as sacrifices to the god Baal, to the pagan god of Baal. So they had begun to take on the practices of the culture in which they were living, the Canaanites, and they began to practice their Judaism, so to speak, the way that the Canaanites were practicing their religion, which was sacrifice of children on altars, burnt. You know, one could argue that since 1973, we have sacrificed 55 million plus children, fetuses, if you would, life, at the altar of some other kind of religion, some other kind of, you know, it's a modern day sacrifice. And it sort of boggles the mind that we've come this far that we were so hardened to what we're doing. I never gave birth, but I adopted. My ex-husband and I adopted. But I've seen sonograms, ultrasounds of, you know, 8-week-old fetuses, embryos, fetuses, and they're little peanuts pulsing. They've got hearts, and they've got, you can see something forming that isn't going to give birth to a Volkswagen. It's going to give birth to a human being. And so when you cut that off, and I guess I've crossed the line already, I mean, I'm out of the morality argument, I'm probably more, well, actually, no, I'm not. Maybe I'm more to the spirituality or the religious argument, Steve, but when you terminate that, and that becomes a business, and that becomes a way of life in this culture, and there's such disregard for life that in New York City last year, 24,000 black babies were born, but 29,000 black babies were aborted. We've become so inured and hardened to the fact that we are disregarding life and throwing it out like trash, literally, unless we're selling the parts for profit, that I feel like we are repeating a cycle of history that has happened more than once, not just to the Israelites, but has happened to cultures, as my friend the psychologist said, every civilization that has disregarded its children. If you look at ISIS, what are they doing now? They just released a video yesterday, a three-year-old. They're teaching them to kill, to assassinate, to cut people's heads off starting at age 3. Yet we look at them and we say they're barbaric, yet 3 years before age 3, literally late-term abortions, we are slaughtering children. So, you know, I give it back to you, Steve, and I'm sure you have thoughts around this as well. I grew up a liberal. I grew up in a Democratic voting township where if you didn't vote Democrat, you didn't get your trash collected. My parents were not religious. They were liberal in their politics. I grew up like a social liberal maniac where every night at dinner I was arguing about some other theoretically, you know, wonderful idea that was socialistic. And then, like many other people, you go through life, you have experiences, and you realize that a liberal approach to social issues is oftentimes, more than not, the wrong way to approach things. I never was an avid pro-lifer. I simply moved somewhat away from it because I adopted. But in the last month, and maybe it's because we are approaching the ninth of Av in my religion, and I am thinking about history, and I am thinking about warnings, and I am thinking about judgment, I feel that this revelation about Planned Parenthood is the most serious of warnings to us since 9/11 that we are way off track as a culture. Steve?
Yeah, there's a few things that I would like to touch on. The first thing is the book that came out about a year ago by Abby Johnson. She worked at Planned Parenthood. And her, it's actually a fascinating read. Again, it's Abby Johnson. And she's been in the media lately and about this story. But the story is fascinating on one side is that she went to work for Planned Parenthood as a while in college, and her hope was that it was meant and was sold to her as a place where women could get health care, that there was a lot of women of poor class that didn't have access to medical care, and this was a place where people could come in and get the help that they couldn't get other places. And that's what she believed, and that's how it was sold to her, and she worked there for many years. In the end, what she realized was she got moved up the rank, and actually, she got into the business side of things and was running centers. It all came down to the business of abortion. Really, is how they had to stay in business was to produce more abortion. And she goes into quite great detail about how the numbers work, how the business of abortion worked. And she absolutely got horrified that, you know, it dawned on her, for whatever, for sadly that it's so long, what business that she was in, the business of killing babies. And it was kind of a conversion that happened that took place in her mind. But she says you have to be naive to think that, you know, otherwise. Planned Parenthood is in the abortion business. This is coming, these are not my words, this is coming from somebody who actually worked at Planned Parenthood. The second thing I'd like to address is it's a little bit, it's kind of the root of all this, and it's about, it goes back to contraception. In the 60s, and I've mentioned this on the show in the past before, is that the Catholic Church was a big opponent of abortion, and there was a cyclical that was written that kind of laid out what was going to happen in the ensuing years. And it almost reads like a science fiction story in the sense that they talk about fetal farms, the selling of baby parts, the rise of gay marriage, the rise of in vitro, the rise of pornography, the rise of sexual assaults on women. And if you look at all the numbers, it has not been contraception has not been, believe it or not, has not been a very good and healthy thing for women. There was a book that came out shortly thereafter by Janet Smith in Dallas called Contraception, Why Not? And she lays the argument that when they came out with contraception, that it was really, if they had done it to men, if men would actually have to take contraception, it would have never been approved. It was the amount of women that had died to get the drug passed, the problems that have happened and continue to happen to women by taking contraception, or stories that go on undocumented just because it's a massive business. But to wrap up kind of the point that I'm making is essentially what the Pope made and what Janet Smith was making, is that contraception or lead people, I would say, let's use the analogy in finance, if you tax something, you discourage it. If you finance it and find ways to support something, it's going to increase. And what contraception did was it actually, people started having more sex because it was sex without consequences, and you led up to the point where you started having more and more abortion. How does this end? It ends just like we see with Planned Parenthood. Abortion becomes a business, and what's the end result of the business? You find new and more creative ways of selling, you know, body parts and baby parts is where we're at now.
Yeah, I think the biggest, probably the most successful business promoting abortion and performing abortion is, in fact, Planned Parenthood. And what I think a lot of people do not know is that Planned Parenthood was begun, it was the idea of Margaret Sanger in the late 1900s, I believe, late 19th century, early 20th century. And Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist, not unlike Adolf Hitler. She believed that there were undesirables in the culture. She believed that blacks needed to be eliminated. And she devised the idea of Planned Parenthood for the express purpose of eliminating the black race. And so I find it absolutely incredible that so many blacks are Democrat. The Democrat Party supports pro-choice. The Democrat Party supports funding Planned Parenthood and fights vehemently. The president said he loves Planned Parenthood, our current president, his quote, not mine. And yet, harm has been done nowhere greater than it has to the black population. We would have a black population in this country multiplied by many millions from what the current percentage of blacks is in the population had Planned Parenthood not performed all the abortions it has performed since Roe v. Wade. Now, the other day, a friend of mine, when having this discussion with him, said to me, "Well, but I'd rather a woman know she could go to a doctor than have to go down an alley with a stick." And I said, "That's a false argument, because that's not the choice. The choice isn't a doctor or an alley and a stick or a hanger. The choice has to come before that. The choice is life or death. Because when we talk, and this is where I'm going to segue out of the morality issue, when we talk about a woman's right to choose as that being the battle cry of pro-choicers, it's not at all about a woman's right to do with her body whatever she wants. If a woman wants to go have her breasts enlarged, no one's going to pick it. If a woman post-menopause wants to have her uterus removed, no one's going to object. If whatever a woman wants to do to her body, there aren't groups of people all over the country objecting to what she wants to do to her body. The objection is what she wants to do to the body that's inside of her body. It's what she wants to do to another living being. That's where the opposition comes in. It's not about a woman's right to choose. I'm a woman. I can do anything I want with my body. It's about what I might do to the body that's inside of me. That's the real issue. So when you talk about, is it a doctor or is it a hanger, you're already once removed from what the actual choice ought to be. It ought to be more about, do we kill or do we allow life to go on? And I guess I'm not completely pro-life to the point where I would say, even in the cases of rape, incest, or the life of the mother, I probably in those instances can actually, in my own mind, at least in this stage of my life, justify where terminating such a pregnancy would be a good thing. But barring that, to me, there's no justification. Someone said to me recently, well, what if a young girl has sex too prematurely and she doesn't know better and she gets pregnant? Why should she have to have that child? And what came to my mind, Steve, was I have a friend who in her 20s was in a relationship with a man she deeply, late 20s, she deeply cared about, and she got pregnant. She didn't tell him. She went and had an abortion. She didn't tell anybody. She went and had an abortion, drove herself home. I happened to have called her the night she drove home. And I said, what are you doing? And she said, I'm not feeling all that well. I'm just taking a rest. And I said, what's wrong? And she said, I just don't feel well. I pushed and I pushed till finally she said, I had an abortion today. And I said, who's there with you? And she said, no one. I said, I'm on my way. And at the time, I lived across the state line in another state. So I drove about an hour and a half or 2 hours to get to her. And when I did, she was the color of death. She was the way I have seen corpses in my life. She was completely gray. And she was very depressed. It is now 40 years later, 30 years later. She never married. She loves children. Probably the greatest regret in her life is that she will never have a child. Well, she was one of those young women who had sex too early and got pregnant. Today, she'd be a very happy person if she could get that child back. So I'm not sure that even that's an argument. And I know maybe someone would say different for a 15-year-old. But isn't that a cultural problem about how we teach our children, what values we give them, and how we teach them to deal with violation of values and principles? I mean, I don't think the solution is murder. And I think it is murder.
Yeah, Carol, you made an excellent you made an excellent point on that. I have a slightly different view, and as you just said, it is murder. There's actually a whole group of women that have come out that are pro-life, and some of the stories, there are groups of women that were, you know, products of rape and products of incest. And they get it. They get the stigma attached to them. But also they have amazing amount of love for their mothers for not aborting them, that all life is precious. And, you know, I would say the principle of the doctrine, which is, you know, taught by the church, is that no good can come from an evil act. So even even though the act of it in itself was evil, you know, to abort a baby like from rape or incest, even that's another evil act. That doesn't justify it. It's not something that we should continue the pattern of. So I know in this day and age that sounds radical, right? I mean, that's what all politicians, that's the limitless test, right? What about the cases of rape and incest? But the fact is, I would say I align myself that in all cases, life is life. And I think you make a very valid point that I think part of the culture that we've kind of, you know, we've gone down this road that it's seen as better to abort the child than to have the baby, that we live in a culture that now that somebody who, you know, that has a baby at a very young age or out of wedlock is so ashamed that it's better to kill the baby. And I think if we had a culture that, you know, at all costs, you embrace life, you have to embrace life, then I think that would send a very different message to parents and to the children, to the kids to do it, to not have the abortion. Because I think just what you said right there is that our lives are shorter, and eventually we do hit, you know, we're no longer a girl who's 15 years old. We're a girl, you know, we're a woman who's, you know, that's 45, that lives with those regrets of having missed out on the baby. I'll tell a personal story. There was a guy at work that I used to work with, and you know, we were about 30 at the time, and he had a son that came in that was probably, you know, 14 at the time, and he just looks at me and he says, "Don't ask. I was a young guy and I did something stupid." But you know what? I had a lot more admiration for him because he was 30. Him and the girl decided to keep the baby. He must have been no more than 14, 15, or 16 when he had the child. And he, you know, was assuming his responsibilities from a very young age and supporting that child. Whatever caused them to make that decision, they chose life. And I could just tell by the look on his face that he was happy that he had done so, that he was happy that he had not aborted the child.
Well, two things. One, I said I adopted a child, my ex-husband and I. Had her birth parents, been inclined to abort her, I wouldn't have this gem that I have. I have my child because someone went through with having a child and deciding not to keep it for whatever reasons. And a loving home found a place for that child. And my daughter is as much mine as had she come out of my body. And so there's a world full of people who would love to have children, but they cannot. And there are children born that need homes. And even that system is somewhat broken because those matches aren't made as often and as well as they could be. And I realize I digress there, but I guess I'm making the point that an abortion would have precluded me from having my daughter. And to me, that's a horrific thought, and I'm forever grateful that her birth mother decided to go ahead and have the baby. I wanted to go back to something you said, Steve. You spoke about the shame of getting pregnant and having a child young, and so better to abort because the society, you know, puts shame or whatever. I don't think this... I'm sorry, what? Did you say something?
No.
I don't think the society puts shame around it anymore. I think it's done out of convenience. I think people want to have sex as frivolously as they want to have sex, as often and with whoever, and protected or not. They don't really care because society doesn't put shame on it anymore. And it's easier to just do whatever you want to do and then undo the consequences without owning that undoing the consequences is murder. That's the thing that we've lost touch with. So if you don't see it and you don't have to think about it and you don't really, and you're taught it's not really life anyway, right? It's just tissue, or it's not a person till it comes out, it can live outside of you, you know, independently of you, then it's so easy to just do whatever it takes to be rid of the, quote, problem. I mean, I remember President Obama, if I'm not mistaken, Steve, didn't he talk about how he wouldn't want his daughters saddled. He was talking about abortion. He wouldn't
That's exactly right.
He wouldn't want them burdened. I think he called it a burden with an unwanted child. Well, when you think about it that way, absolutely. Absolutely, you're going to teach the next generation that that's just what it is, that children are burdensome and life is burdensome, and so just be done with it in whatever way, shape, or form it takes. But you know what? There are consequences to everything we do. There is nothing that we do in life that there isn't consequence for, and I have to believe with such strong prophetic warnings about sacrificing life in the Bible, about sacrificing children. We in essence sacrifice children through abortion to false gods, because are we not, and I don't want to sound, you know, crazy religious here, but are we not worshiping at the god of ego and self-gratification and the god of convenience and the god of indulgence? Are we not doing that when we terminate a life to make our life easier, to not take responsibility for our actions? I think the way I look at it, the answer is a clear yes. It's the cheap and easy out. But I don't think it goes without consequence. And I have to believe that this, again, this unveiling, this revelation about Planned Parenthood and the harvesting of human organs, you know, I think it was a couple of years ago in Europe, in Britain, actually, there was a scandal about using fetuses from abortion for generation of electricity in power plants. Do you remember that, Steve?
I don't.
Yeah, it was less than 2 years ago. I remember it was in, I'm almost certain it was in Britain. And what, you know, you're talking about science fiction movies. You're talking about really dark, weird stuff, except it's not fiction, and it actually is occurring. And if you can harvest humans from inside of uteruses and sell the body parts, you're not far away from Mengele in Auschwitz. You're not very far away from the experiments. I mean, it's inhuman what humans are capable of doing. Some of the experiments that Mengele oversaw, taking newborn babies, I mean newborns, within hours, and laying them on their mother's chests, but taping the breasts so the infant couldn't get milk, and seeing how long it took the infant to starve to death, while the mother laid there agonized that her child was dying on top of her. I mean, when you don't think of infants or fetuses as human, then everything becomes acceptable, because what you can do to an object is markedly different than what you can do to a human. And when you objectify, and I don't care whether you talk about objectifying women in pornography, because that's what happens in pornography, you objectify women, then it becomes easy to go out and rape women because they're nothing but objects anyway. Or you objectify a human by calling it tissue. I think, in fact, Steve, the woman you referenced, Abby Johnson, the former director of several Planned Parenthood clinics, she said that one of the last things that she that put her out the door and made her pro-life was that they used the expression products of conception. That was what they called the organs and the tissue and the fetuses, products of conception. So they're products, right? They're not human. They're products, like your car is a product, right? Your printer, your computer, they're all products. So Planned Parenthood calls them products of conception. It's completely dehumanizing what we're dealing with. And I think that there really needs to be a national conversation. I don't know that there will be, because we're so off track and the Congress is so cowardly. I don't know how far, how much distance we're going to get out of the revelations about Planned Parenthood. I guess it really depends on who in Congress or who in the public media keeps it front and center, or who the next president is and what they do about it. But it's part, I really believe, part of the degradation and the breakdown of our society, and part of the trauma that we're bringing upon ourselves. Because to disrespect life, as far as I'm concerned, is to spit in the face of the Creator. Because there is something that created everything, including us, that has the power to create life. And no one gives us the right to simply destroy arbitrarily that which is given life by a power that much greater than ourselves, whether you believe it's God or you believe it's the giant mainframe in the sky. I don't really care. There's something out there infinitely more powerful than we are. It reminds me of Donald Trump this week when he was asked if he ever asked God for forgiveness. And his answer was, no, I don't. So I've known people in my life who didn't think there was a power greater than themselves. And I found those people to be problematic in many ways when it came to human interaction and understanding what intimacy is and our responsibility to one another as humans. So when we think we can do what Planned Parenthood has done, and they've done it because it's legal, by the way, let's own the fact that we made it legal. Abortion is legal. Murder is legal in America. It doesn't surprise me we've wound up where we are with the revelations about Planned Parenthood.
Carol, I want to address one thing. I'd like to get your views on it. What's been shocking to me is the following, is that this is a major news story. It's covered, you know, all over the internet. It's covered on, let's call it what, you know, Drudge, which is, as the media says, it's the first place that they look at every day for the news stories. It used to be the joke that the New York Times used to drive the daily story for both parties, mostly the Democrats. But there's no doubt in anybody's mind in the media today, and they've said it over and over, that Drudge drives the media. What his stories is essentially what people have to comment on. His story has been on the front page for the last week. It's been all over alternative media. It's been everywhere on top websites, top news websites. But if you look at the mainstream media, it's almost like a blip. I think the only place where I've really seen any kind of commentary has been on Fox. And I was just curious to see, what's your take on that? At some point, is not reporting the news not news? Is that how they view it? Or is it the scandal just so big that if they report it, they report on it, it totally removes and destroys a major plank in the party? I was just curious what your thoughts were on that.
I don't think that I think it's this, Steve. There are so many big stories right now that need attention, meaning they need public attention. They need public outcry, public outrage, without violence, but public outrage. And none of them are getting the reaction that the public ought to be giving them. The bad Iranian deal, John Kerry today testifying before the Senate and having the audacity to say that if we don't go through with this deal, Iran will never trust us again. Who gives a damn? They're not trustworthy to begin with, and we shouldn't be in the business of dealing with them. So there's the Iran deal. There's the abortion story. There's an upcoming election where we've got a candidate for the Democratic Party who's probably the shoo-in, who is one of the most deceptive and proven deceptive people in politics, with a history of lying, who most of the people polled think is dishonest, Hillary Clinton. And she's going to get the Democratic nomination, and she may get the presidency. This is about the media knows, Steve, that we've stopped caring. We've stopped caring enough to do anything about what's happening to our nation. And this will be what we have to answer for if there are future generations that survive. This is what we will have to answer for, that we the people, that we the public, that we the individuals simply stopped caring. You know, yesterday there were 10,000 people, I believe, in Times Square protesting the Iranian deal. But we're talking about 10,000 out of what, 300 million? It's nothing. That deal is a disaster. And yet people just get up, they go to work, they do it, and they talk about the corrupt politicians. We're way beyond corrupt politicians. We need the equivalent of an uprising among the populace, almost a revolution, not with guns, but a revolution where civil disobedience becomes the norm, and yet people won't do it. And so I think the media, which sold its soul a long time ago, now knows that they absolutely don't have to run with anything, because there will be no backlash, there will be no outcry, there will be a few voices in the wilderness, and then the next story will come along. And this is why I think we are headed for a crisis, either an act of nature, meaning an act of God, an act of terror, an act of economic collapse, again, like a 2001, we had 9/11. 7 years later, 2008, we had the collapse. We're now 7 years later. I think we're due, because the warnings that have come that we need to reevaluate where we are as a culture have gone unheeded. You know, there's a cute little story. A man is going down the road with a cart, and the horse is walking straight, and all of a sudden the horse starts to pull off to the left. So the driver behind the cart, he yanks the right rein, and the horse straightens out again. Well, they go another mile, and the horse starts to pull to the right. So he pulls the left rein, and the horse straightens out. And then he goes a little further, and the horse pulls left again. So now he yanks harder. Horse pulls right, he pulls back even harder. Now the horse veers off to the left, he picks up the whip and he cracks it, and the horse straightens out. We've had a lot of yanking left and right. The whip will crack soon, because we're not heeding the warnings of what path we should be going down. We're headed down a very dangerous road. And so my long answer to your short question is that I think the media knows there's no repercussion, so what the heck? Let them, they'll promote whatever agenda they believe in, and they believe in a progressive agenda because they were educated in journalism schools all over this country that were progressive curriculum. And that's what's happened to what was supposed to be the fourth estate. They're not there. And there's no one to oppose them not being there. The reason Donald Trump is so popular right now isn't because he is delicate of word. It's because he's speaking, however crudely at times, what everybody knows, which is everything's broken, nobody cares, the politicians are corrupt, the border's open, babies are dying, and we get up and we go to work. And we see if we can hold it together one more day in our personal lives, not understanding that we're all going to suffer the consequence. And I hate to leave on a negative note. We've got a minute and a half, Steve. Maybe you can say something that's more positive.
No, I'll just allude to the Trump story, which I think is fascinating. He's just, love him or hate him, it's an authentic voice. And it just goes to show you that people don't want to be lied to. They just want to hear an authentic voice. And call it what it was. His principles are, he's got two principles, right? The border's broken. Illegal immigration is destroying the country. And we need more business. So as much as what the administration is trying to lie about both issues, everybody knows that it's broken. And so the media is dumbfounded because they can't understand why this message is resonating. And his message is the truth. Those two things are obvious to everybody. So maybe just an authentic voice is really what people are looking for.
It is what people are looking for, and that's why they're so out to do him in and try to make his followers seem like crazies, because they don't know what to do with an authentic voice. It scares the hell out of them. They've been living in deceit for so long that they know that an authentic voice is like shining a light in a dark corner. We are out of time, everybody. We hope you found things to think about and move forward with from tonight's show. We'll be back again next Monday. Have a great weekend. And I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
This is Above the Fray.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.